Welcome back to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Our next story comes to us via producer Fernanda Chavarri, who's in the studio with me. Hey, Fernanda.
Hey, Maria.
So, Fernanda, for quite a while, you've been reporting and following up on what's been going on in El Salvador in regards to violence and to the people who are fleeing really dangerous situations there.
Yeah, we've all heard about the high levels of violence in Central America in recent times, especially in El Salvador. And this became even more present in the news back in 2014. I'm sure you remember when there was a spike in the number of unaccompanied child migrants showing up at the U.S.-Mexico border. Most of them were from Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador.
Now, back then, wasn't Honduras the murder capital of the world?
It was. I mean, we were talking about 100 killings per 100,000 people in Honduras back then. However, now, fast forward 3 years, and things have gotten a little bit worse in El Salvador. There were so many murders in 2015 and 2016 that now El Salvador is the most violent country in the world.
That is incredible. And it's not like you've seen those headlines at all, because there aren't as many headlines about this. I mean, Central America has essentially fallen out of the news cycle. And Fernanda, you wanted to make sure that we put attention on this region. So you have a story for us from this part of the world.
Yes, I recently was contacted by Katie Schlechter. She's a reporter and she's done stories for us in the past. And she told me about two young men from El Salvador. You could say this is a migration story, but the more Katie told me about this, the more it became a love story. So, Katie, you have a story to tell me?
I do. So, last summer, I was in Tapachula, which is this town in Mexico. You know about it.
I've been there.
So it's about an hour from the Guatemalan border. And I was in this plaza, and I met these two young men.
Jorge Alberto Alfaro González.
Mi nombre es Mauricio Antonio Pérez.
They're both from El Salvador. Jorge is tall and husky, and he speaks so softly that I had to seriously invade his personal space to actually be able to hear him properly. Mauricio, though, is shorter and more smiley and jokey, but even though he's the smaller of the two, he actually compared himself to a parrot one of the last times we talked.
Bueno, yo por mi personalidad me la paso hablando la mayoría del tiempo. No paro de hablar. Parezco perico.
How'd they meet?
Well, they met on a Facebook group for gay Salvadorans.
Huh.
So the thing is they can't even look back and reminisce about the early parts of their relationship because they deleted their chats after all of their conversations.
Why?
They both have younger siblings who would borrow their phones from time to time, and they didn't want to risk them stumbling on their old conversations and discovering the nature of their relationships.
Because they're not out?
They're not out to their families at all.
Para ellos ser gay ya es pecado, te vas a ir al infierno, te va a pasar esto, te va a pasar lo otro. Entonces, pues, mejor
what he's saying there is that for his family in El Salvador, being gay is a sin, and you go to hell if you're gay, so he'd rather just keep the peace.
They're both from religious families?
Yeah, they're both evangelical Christians, so they have to keep their identities and their sexualities totally under the radar. So this, along with the danger of being gay in El Salvador, means that Jorge and Mauricio had to meet in secret. Their first date, they met in this mall in an entirely different town where neither of them knew anyone. Mauricio said he was nervous because he wasn't even sure Jorge would show up. Mauricio, being the chatty parrot that he is, jokes and says that he practically interrogated Jorge on the first meeting. He wanted to know everything about his life, his hobbies, his siblings.
Parecía loco preguntándole cosas, como que qué hacía en su rato libre, los hermanos, familia.
They both had difficult dynamics at home. They struggled to keep their identity secret from their parents and their siblings. And despite their efforts, they both feel like their families always suspected them. In fact, when he was younger, Mauricio said that he was even bullied by his older brother for acting effeminate. Mauricio said that he pushed him to join the army to prove his manliness.
Joining the military, especially in a place like El Salvador, I imagine is kind of a big deal. And he did it just so he could hide his sexuality?
Well, that and it was a steady job. It was a decent income, and it pushed him to act in this more stereotypically masculine way, I guess.
So that sort of helped with the bullying that he was getting from his older brother about being more
effeminate. Exactly. So those situations weren't happening anymore. But joining the military created much bigger problems in his life. The military in El Salvador is actually in direct conflict with the gangs.
The situation there is so complicated. Basically, you have the two major gangs that have become extremely powerful in the country, the Mara Salvatrucha, which most people know as MS-13, and Calle 18.
And this is what Mauricio and Jorge have known all their lives. And Mauricio, remember, he's the smaller, chattier one. He stepped right into that world when he signed his military contract.
So did the gang start going after him once he joined the military?
Yeah.
Bueno, ellos se enteraron que estaba en la brigada, que era militar, y pues por eso no me querían en la colonia.
The Calle 18 gang demanded that he leave the army and join the gang instead. And when he said no, they went after him. At the same time, the gang had also been targeting his sister for a while. Mauricio says that on a Sunday, in October of 2013, he went to work, and that night, his sister never came home.
Me fui un día domingo para lo que fue para la brigada.
María left for the market, and she never came back. A few days later, a neighbor told Mauricio's mom to look in an abandoned well near their house.
Eran piedras, tronco de todo.
She went with Mauricio's siblings and other family members to find the well. It was full of trash, so they began digging. Mauricio told me that it wasn't until they started to smell a body that local firemen finally came to pull his sister out. Her throat had been slit. Mauricio was devastated, and he was also terrified. He started to fear for the rest of his family. He moved out of his house, he left the military as soon as his contract was up. But the gangs continued to harass him. One day they robbed him and they beat him so badly that he was covered in bruises and couldn't work for an entire week. He felt like there was nowhere in El Salvador where he would be safe.
En cualquier lugar que uno en El Salvador vaya va a encontrar un miembro de pandilla. El Salvador no es un lugar seguro.
So what about his boyfriend, Jorge?
Jorge went through a similar situation, but with the rival gang, MS-13. Because remember, they lived in opposing gang territories?
Right.
These gang members in his town murdered his younger cousins for refusing to join, and they were only 12 and 15 years old.
Y eran unos niños. O sea, les cortaron la vida tan rápido y se empezaban a vivir. Y no es justo que ellos hayan hecho eso.
He says that they were just children, and that it's not fair that their lives were cut short before they really even began.
So, Katie, what happened after this terrible loss for the family?
After killing his cousins, MS-13 gang members started trying to recruit Jorge, too. And when he refused, they ran him over with a motorcycle as a warning. He had to join or die. His boyfriend, Mauricio, was also still getting attacked periodically by the rival gang, Calle 18. And by 2016, they couldn't take it anymore. They had to get out of El Salvador and leave for Mexico, and they had to do it fast.
How were they going to do that?
So here was the big problem. Jorge didn't have the money to leave Mexico. But at this point, they were getting really serious as a couple. So they had to make this very difficult decision. They had to separate. Mauricio would go ahead of Jorge, and he would get to Mexico first. Jorge would stay behind and try to gather enough money so that he could join Mauricio in Mexico.
Más bien fue un hasta pronto, ¿no? La promesa de que siempre vamos a estar ahí y que nos íbamos a volver a encontrar.
He says, it was more like a see you later. It was a promise that we would always be there and find each other again, no matter what.
I can't imagine how difficult that decision must have been. Were they apart for a long time?
Luckily, the separation wasn't long, but those few weeks felt like a lifetime for both of them.
At this point, then, Jorge had enough money and he could make it to Mexico, but weren't they both essentially undocumented in Mexico?
Exactly. And they had to fix that situation, so they both applied for asylum in Mexico.
I've reported on this, and it's not an easy thing to get.
Mexico's Commission for Aid to Refugees, or COMAR, is the agency that takes care of the process, and it's pretty complicated. Tons of paperwork, tons of interviews. You have to tell your story over and over again.
And try to show some sort of proof for why you had to flee your country.
Bruises.
Broken bones.
X-rays or doctor's notes describing injuries from being attacked.
Even better if you have proof that you filed complaints with the police about those attacks in your home country. And then there's the wait.
For 3 months, you have to go back in and check in at the Comar office every week, every Monday to be exact.
Miss one Monday and your case is dropped.
Marked as abandoned.
Oh, and you're not allowed to work while your case is being processed. Unlike in the US, where asylum applicants can work. What you can do in Mexico is get assistance from the United Nations Refugee Agency to help you maybe pay for a small apartment. On top of all of this, Jorge and Mauricio have an added layer of vulnerability.
They're two gay men fleeing danger in one country into another country that really isn't much safer for the LGBTQ community.
I would say that's an understatement, Katie. Mexico has the second highest number of hate crimes against LGBTQ people in the hemisphere. And when gay and transgender people are victims of violence, those crimes are rarely investigated.
What's more is that although there are several migrant shelters in Tapachula and all throughout Mexico, not all of them are friendly to LGBTQ people. Most are religiously affiliated, and some can be especially unwelcoming to migrants who don't fit the general mold.
Even outside of migrant shelters, just in everyday life, small towns in Mexico, especially southern towns like Tapachula, tend to be less accepting of a gay couple.
Jorge says that despite the idea that Mexico is supposedly more open to LGBTQ people than El Salvador, he definitely feels the homophobia. He overhears the same kinds of slurs and insults that were common back home.
A pesar de que supuestamente en México se puede, o sea, andar libre y todo, pero no todas.
Amidst all that uncertainty, something finally happened. About 3 months after he applied, Jorge was granted asylum.
Well, that's great news. He must have been thrilled.
Hold on. That's Jorge. Mauricio, his boyfriend, was not so lucky. He was denied asylum and told to return to El Salvador.
Why?
See, since he arrived in Mexico first, Mauricio didn't have much information about the asylum application process. It didn't occur to him that he should tell Mexican officials about his sexuality. But by the time Jorge arrived, Mauricio was wiser. He encouraged him to include his sexuality in his application to help his chances. Mauricio thinks that this is the main reason why they're in their current situation. Jorge says he's afraid that Mexican immigration officials are going to deport Mauricio.
So at this point, what options do they have?
Well, they could get married. That way, Jorge could pass his protected status on to Mauricio as his husband.
But in Mexico, it's not that simple. Same-sex marriage is tricky. It is unconstitutional to ban same-sex marriage, but it's on a state-by-state basis.
Only a third of Mexican states allow for it. And Chiapas, where Jorge and Mauricio are living now, is not one of them. Nor are any of the states bordering Chiapas. The closest courtroom that would marry them is in Mexico City, which is a more than 20-hour bus ride away.
And that 20-hour bus ride could be dangerous for Mauricio, right? Because he's in Mexico illegally, and there's immigration checkpoints all over Mexico, especially in southern Mexico, to try to stop Central American migrants from making it to the U.S.
Yeah, so I was aware of that, but I had no idea exactly how intense these checkpoints were until I was traveling through Chiapas by bus myself. In a 5-hour ride, just 5 hours, without crossing any state or national borders, our bus was stopped 4 separate times. Immigration agents boarded twice, shining flashlights in our faces and demanding multiple passengers show their identification, myself included. We also passed through a military checkpoint where a guy literally got on the bus with an assault rifle and slowly walked the aisle to get a good look at each of us. And that's why Mauricio and Jorge are kind of stuck.
So, Katie, that was all last year. What is their situation now?
So they're still stuck. I've been staying in touch with them, mostly over WhatsApp and Facebook Messenger. And I also went back down to Tapachula in January and visited them in their apartment, which is a pretty bare-bones situation with concrete floors and walls. The only piece of furniture was a bed.
And how are they doing, like, emotionally?
When I got there, they were actually watching Pokemon. They seem to be hanging in there, but the denial of Mauricio's appeal for asylum has really complicated things for them. First of all, there's that ever-present fear of deportation. And also, they're no longer receiving financial aid from the UN Refugee Agency. And since Mauricio can't legally work since he's undocumented in Mexico, that makes things really financially tight for them.
What about Jorge? He's the one that got asylum, right?
Yeah, Jorge can legally work, and he started applying for jobs back in the fall. He'd go to a place with his resume and ask to speak with the manager. They'd lead him back into the office, and from the manager's initial questions, it would be obvious that positions were available. But as soon as the boss found out that Jorge was Salvadoran, they'd ask him to leave.
Yo era extranjero, y mucho menos personas del Salvador.
This went on for months, and he couldn't even afford to take the bus downtown for his job search. So he spent hours each day trudging across the city in over 90-degree heat and suffocating humidity. When he'd almost given up, he finally landed a job at a large warehouse store. When I talked to him, he mentioned that he was a little stressed about hiding his sexuality from the guys he works with.
Que si con quién vivo, o sea, todo eso lo quieren saber y yo solo pues trato de manera de evadir preguntas.
I'm hearing him say that his coworkers are wondering about his life. They're asking him if he has a girlfriend, who he lives with. I'm sure it's exhausting to have to escape those questions all the time. What about Mauricio? He can't get a job, so what does he do all day?
So he spends his time cleaning and watching Pokemon.
They really like Pokemon.
Yes, they do. And Mauricio's also become quite the knitter, and he's been trying to sell his creations in Tapachula.
What does he make?
He makes mostly beanies, which seems like an interesting business choice considering the fact that Tapachula is 90 degrees and humid every day and nobody wants to buy them. He gave me one with a Pikachu on it.
A veces sí me siento algo aburrido. A veces hasta sueño me da.
Mauricio says he gets bored sometimes, but staying busy in the apartment helps keep him from missing Jorge too much.
That is so sweet.
Yeah, they really are pretty inseparable.
What about their families? Do they, I mean, they've been gone from their hometowns for a while. Do they know where they are? Do they know they're together?
Neither of them speak with their families that much, but they do know that they're in Tapachula, but they don't know that they're a couple.
Do they know they're gay?
No, they still don't know, they suspect, and this is something that makes the journey uniquely difficult for LGBTQ migrants and asylum seekers. They often can't count on their families to send them money or even emotional encouragement. Mauricio and Jorge really just have each other.
Cuando me escribe mi hermana, me dice que por qué no me caso aquí, por qué no tengo mujer aquí.
Jorge says that his sister writes to him and asks him why he doesn't just get married to a Mexican woman.
No, porque tengo una persona.
Sitting on the bed in their empty apartment, Jorge looks over at Mauricio with this look of total devotion and admiration. He can barely get the words out as he tells me that he doesn't need to find anyone in Mexico because he's already found the best person he could have possibly ended up with.
Y ha sido la mejor persona con la que me encontré.
What's going on with their marriage and their wedding? Are they still planning on doing that?
Well, they still really do want to get married. And it's not just because of the situation that they're in now. They're incredibly in love and they've made sacrifices to each other. They flat out refuse to be separated again.
Es cierto que salimos separados. O sea, yo no lo puedo dejar y tampoco lo voy a dejar.
Jorge says, I can't leave him. I won't leave him. He says that he wants his life to be with him, to grow old together.
Yo sí quiero mi vida con él. Quiero vivir junto a él. Y le digo que quiero llegar a viejito con él.
Thank you to Katie Schlechter for her reporting and to Latino USA's Fernanda Chavarri for producing that story.